Morning, like I said, everybody. My name's Gavin Morgan. I'm the Senior Manager of Global Logistics here at PCI, based out of the UK. I was asked to do a few of these water cooler sessions over the last few weeks, and we've kind of led us up now to today's session, which is quite a hot topic in the current climate, and I'm sure you'll all appreciate, regarding direct-to-patient supply. So thank you to those of you that have been sending some suggestions in to the marketing team over the last 7 days regarding some questions that you had or topics that you'd like us to touch on. So I've jotted a few of those down. Hopefully, as I go through the session, I'll cover all of those. But again, if there's anything in particular, please feel free to post that question. I'll make every effort to respond. So just kicking off with direct to patient. One of the things I see from a logistics standpoint and the discussions we're having with sponsors is there is a clear difference between a full direct-to-patient program.
Okay, hello everybody. More technical fault, so I will try again. Hopefully you can see and hear me. So I was just saying then, before I lost contact with you all, regarding the differences between direct-to-patient protocols, where it's in the regulatory submissions that the entire protocol design is kind of bypassing the standard investigator site, where we would have a central pharmacy potentially supporting an entire region, versus the site-to-patient or the site-to-subject transfers, where studies are set up typically for the investigator site to handle the distribution and the dispensing as a part of a standard clinical trial. But for one reason or another, the patient is unable to get into the investigator site, and therefore we have to manage a site-to-patient transfer. In those instances, you know, because it's not a full regulatory change, a lot of sponsors ask that, do we need regulatory approval? You know, again, I'm not the expert in every EU region, and it does vary from one region to the next, but from an MHRA standpoint in the UK, their expectation is that the sponsor has just done a risk assessment, and there's a justification for doing that transfer. So they don't require a substantial amendment, as if they would do if an entire protocol design was being altered. The same applies in a lot of the EU states, where, again, there may be a requirement for your CRO to notify the regulatory body that you're going to do a site-to-patient transfer. But as we're in this COVID-19 situation, we're seeing a lot of guidance throughout Europe that are kind of giving blanket approvals, blanket authorizations, that people don't need to obtain an approval each time, because there's a clear reason for doing this. Another thing that customers ask us from PCI is, can we bypass an investigator site altogether? Can we go direct to patient from our CMO or from our in-country depot? Prior to this week, the initial answer would typically be no. Mainly because, you know, from PCI's perspective, our facilities, we wouldn't have a pharmacy license. We wouldn't be classed as a dispensing site. So in those instances, we wouldn't always be able to ship directly from our depot to that patient's home. Literally, I think it was Tuesday of this week, the European Medicines Agency, the EMA, released some guidance regarding the management of material during this COVID-19 pandemic. And it does outline in there the possibility that the likes of PCI or distribution depots will be able to ship directly from our facilities to the patient's home. That said, you know, you would still need the risk assessments. You would still need a lot of guidance and quite a good process regarding GDPR. So the general data protection regulations that came out in Europe a few years ago regarding patient confidentiality, because whenever you're distributing to a patient's home, whether it's directly from an in-country depot or from an investigator site, you have to be really careful as to who and how you share that patient's information, even down to their home address. You know, we need a certain level of information to coordinate those shipments, but we don't necessarily need to know the person's name, their house number, their town, et cetera, et cetera. So this is all, you know, getting us to that situation where we look at doing those. Some of the questions that have been posed to us this week before today's sessions was regarding, how do you handle the temperature control aspect of it? What if there's a temperature excursion? Who's responsible for packing the materials, et cetera, et cetera? So again, talking from PCI's perspective, we have multiple specialist couriers that we have strong relationships with, all of which have some very good processes and systems in place regarding the different levels of direct to patient. The first thing to outline is regarding the temperature control. You know, typically The investigational material, certainly with good distribution practice, has been shipped to the investigator site, whether it's refrigerated, whether it's 15 to 25, and it's been stored at that temperature whilst with the investigator. Moving that material from the investigator sites to the patient, some customers ask, well, do I still need to do that temperature control? Do I need to transfer it to refrigerated conditions? Do I need a temperature monitor to record that data? Again, typically the answer would be yes, but it is each sponsor's responsibility to do a risk assessment to determine that does it actually need a temperature monitor. If the patient is only 30 minutes away from the investigator site, you've got good stability data. Have you got the option of sending it temperature controlled, but not with a temperature monitor? If you are including a temperature monitor, who's going to record that data when it arrives at the patient's home? COVID-19 makes it even more complex regarding social distancing, ensuring that contactless deliveries can take place whenever possible. And to be fair, all the couriers that we've always worked with are very on the ball with this. They've all got some very robust systems in place regarding contactless delivery, involving the going, you know, obviously not entering the threshold or going over the threshold, not entering the person's home, arriving at the person's home as, you know, as agreed, as an agreed time, letting the person know that they've arrived, but leaving the shipping system on the doorstep, taking a few steps back to ensure they're 2 meters away, ensuring that the patient isn't required to actually sign the delivery note for a proof of delivery. So the courier may ask the patient or who's accepting the shipment for their name, but they won't ask them to sign for it. All of these sort of things are just, you know, just to support that contact-free delivery process. With the temperature data, if there's an excursion, not so much with 15 to 25 products, but certainly with refrigerated material, because it's being packed in the pharmacy or at the investigator site, and as I said, you know, we're not going into a walk-in cold store like you would at a depot, for example. The shipping system is being opened on the doorstep, potentially. The product is being removed before it goes into the patient's home. Depending on what the recording intervals are on those temperature monitors, the chances are there's going to be an excursion. So again, it comes back to that initial risk assessment. What kind of stability data are we working with here? Have you got the stability data that enable slight excursions to be, you know, okayed, if you like, the disposition to be assigned? Is it something that's a self-administered drug versus a drug that requires the intervention of a study nurse? You know, it all just becomes a little bit more complex. But as with everything with distribution, certainly of clinical trial supplies, communication is key. So I would always encourage our customers that when they're looking at doing a site-to-patient transfer, that everybody's on the same page. The investigator site is aware of what the booking process is. Do they book via a CMO? Has it been set up for the investigator to liaise directly with a third-party courier? Has the project been set up? Are they requesting it via email? Do they need to log on to a web portal? There's lots of different things that that kind of mirror across the board, across the couriers, across the countries, that kind of are applicable wherever we're doing this process. The packing of the material. A lot of customers have asked me that, will the courier go into the investigator site and say, I've come to collect patient pack number 123? Again, the default answer to that would be no. The expectation would be that the investigator site is dispensing that medication, just like they would be if the patient had made it into site for their site visit. The only difference is the courier is taking it to the patient. Yes, the courier will arrive at the investigator site with a preconditioned shipping system. Yes, there will be a temperature monitor included. But because of, again, access restrictions, a courier may not always be able to go right into the pharmacy. The courier may not be present at the time that the material is placed into the shipping system. So with that in mind, the temperature monitor is often started beforehand. So it's within the shipping system. The shipping system is handed to the investigator. The investigator puts the product inside and the courier will deliver it to the patient. And again, ensuring that patient confidentiality throughout the entire process is relevant. With the temperature data, I've touched on the 2 to 8 and stability data and the chances of having a false excursion. So, you know, every client's different, every project is different. But I would encourage customers, because the courier isn't the pharmacist, the courier isn't authorizing the patient to take the material, They will verify that if there's a temperature excursion, that will be reported to ourselves or to the investigator site or via the local courier office. But we wouldn't expect the courier driver to say to a patient, yes, you can take that medication. We would build that into the processes. So again, that would be in that communication plan, that if we had a customer that was looking at doing a site to patient transfer, we just wanted to make sure that everybody is aware of what the roles and responsibilities are and who's going to be given what information. Things like the blinded delivery notes, again, going back to GDPR and patient confidentiality, a courier will be given that patient information, but they'll only be given it by the investigator site. So if an investigator site was to contact PCI saying that they've got X number of bottles to be delivered to this patient, we may require to know where that, you know, a rough idea of where that patient is located. And again, it's not for any suspicious reason or anything to find out any personal information. It's purely to support the courier. You know, some countries it's not as important. You know, if it's within the UK, we know that, you know, even worst case scenario, we can do it in a day. We could drive from London to Edinburgh, for example. If it's in North America, obviously it's a lot wider landscape with different states and time zones. So we may have a site located in New York, but the patient may be in Florida, for example. So having that information helps. So we're able to know that, you know, do we need to fly it? Does it, is it able to be delivered the same day? All of this needs to be known up front because it just supports the courier in, you know, scheduling the suitable logistic plan. When the courier actually speaks to the site, it's at that point that they get given the patient's details, name, address, phone number, so on and so forth. Something else that we're seeing in the EU, and
Gavin,
for that matter, is patients that aren't located in the country where they're actually rolled onto a clinical trial. So we've had multiple examples here at PCI where we've had customers that are running the trial in Belgium, for example, and they're recruiting patients in Belgium, but the patient is no longer living in Belgium or they're on vacation. How do we get the medication to them? If it's within the European Union and there's free circulation, it's very straightforward. If it's outside of the EU and we're effectively importing product, it can become more challenging, but it is something that can be done. You know, just off the top of my head, we've had examples where we've mentioned, like I said, the Belgium to Israel shipments. We've done Italy to Moldova. We've done Australia to New Zealand. All examples where there was a requirement for customs documentation. With the Israel scenario, so as I'm sure you're all aware, Israel is a country that for clinical trials would typically have an import license. There would be Form 7s issued to each investigator site. But what if the study isn't taking place in Israel? There was never an intention to do it in Israel. It just happens that the patient is now based there. In those instances, we've had two examples or two scenarios. One where we did a hand carry, where a courier actually collected the material from the clinic in Belgium and took it on as their hand luggage, for want of a better word, and flew it directly into Tel Aviv, where they then delivered it to the patient. In that instance, there was no customs invoice because it hasn't actually gone through cargo, for argument's sake. But there was a requirement for the doctor's prescription from the Belgian investigator. There was a document from the Belgian Medical Board and a document from the Israeli Ministry of Health that just authorized this courier, if you like, to carry through the product through customs. When we've shipped to Moldova, for example, we shipped via air and we did need customs paperwork. We did need a pro forma invoice. We needed documents from the dispensing doctor. We needed a letter from the sponsor that clearly detailed why it was we were shipping this product to Moldova. And then at the time of clearance, the CRO in Moldova or a contracted third party in Moldova assisted with that customs clearance. And then the courier did the final direct-to-patient delivery. So again, you know, we've had clients ask for different examples, different scenarios, but they're the only three that we've had examples of. But again, if anyone's got any particular countries, please feel free to reach out to the marketing team, Marissa and Becky and Amanda, and I'm sure they'll pass those queries on to me. Just looking back through my notes,
Gavin,
some of the other things that people asked, they asked around the cost implications. Again, I wouldn't lie to you, it's not cheap. Customers may have their clinical budget. They're assuming X number of shipments with a standard courier. And then all of a sudden, we're utilizing specialist couriers for these patient deliveries. And with the COVID-19 situation, we could be doing in, you know, 20, 30, 40, the numbers could be endless. The cost increases can be quite significant. So just trying to be clever or managing that, you know, how many times is it going to be needed? How many times is it going to need temperature control? Are you able to utilize one driver to do multiple drop-offs? Is there going to be the need of a temp tail to be downloaded? All of these things, shouldn't be doing it to cut corners and to save costs, but I'm just putting it out there because it does obviously have a big impact on the costs associated to direct-to-patient shipments. Okay. So Gavin? Again, apologies earlier on regarding the technical glitches. I've just seen a few of the questions that have come up, and Alexis mentioned the EMA guidance. Has the FDA provided any guidance for US depot to patient? We have had correspondence from the FDA, more regarding blanket approvals of the site to patient transfers and the utilization of third parties that offer, you know, like I said, a central hub or a central pharmacy. So we've had examples in the US where we've shipped from our PCI facility to a third party depot that receives the product and then just forwards it directly onto the patient's home. And again, they're taking responsibility for that patient confidentiality, et cetera, et cetera. That's not to say that the FDA won't follow suit with the EMA and kind of maybe give CMOs the authorization to bypass that middleman. At this time, I haven't seen that regulation, but again, it's something that we'll certainly follow up on. Just looking out, if there's any other questions. I think a lot of them have kind of been covered with the feedback that we had from the attendees in the run-up today. So I don't know if anyone else has got anything else they need to post, or if the marketing team have anything else that they need to wrap us up with. Again, I know we kind of missed the first 5 or 10 minutes, so apologies if it felt a little rushed. There's obviously a lot to cover, and like I said at the start of the session, you know, if anybody does have any particular countries they're considering doing this in, if anyone needs any more information regarding the contactless delivery, how you ensure patient confidentiality, regulatory approvals or notifications, again, please feel free to reach out to the team, and I'm sure they can forward it my way, and we'll get back to you as soon as possible.
Okay. Hey, Gavin, can you hear me now?
There's Marissa.
Yes.
So, Marissa, did you have anything else you wanted to just share with the team regarding upcoming events and things following on from our DDP sessions?
Yes, I just want to make sure that you can hear me.
I can hear you very quiet, but I can just about hear you.
Okay. So everyone, if I may direct your attention to the screen. Give me 1 second while I share. Okay. So next week, we will be talking about importing clinical supplies into China. That's going to be with Rich Nelson. Sorry, I'm hearing an echo. Okay, we're going to be talking to Rich Nelson next week about importing into China. That will be a pretty good chat. There's a lot of considerations, especially if you want to move materials between China and Hong Kong, because Hong Kong is considered a free economic trade station, and as we know, China is not. The other interesting thing about China is that it's a one-way street. Everything that goes in cannot come out, so that is also a consideration. Here is our list of upcoming water cooler chats. If you haven't signed up for them yet, please go to the link at the bottom of the screen and feel free to sign up for them. We will be adding more. We are going to be meeting with a team and seeing what topics we need to add to it. So when you get the survey today, if you can please let us know what you would like to hear about, that would be fantastic. Again, really sorry for the technology issues today. We're going to try to figure out what happened there. But as always, thank you so much for your time. Gavin, thank you so much for running this.
We got there in the end.
And everyone, have a great Thursday.
Thank you, Marissa. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.